You're listening to the best of Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now, he's sometimes known as the unluckiest man in the world. Pete Best was the drummer with the Beatles before they achieved absolute world domination. He played 281 concerts with the Beatles and played their first recording session. But after 2 years with the band, Beatles manager Brian Epstein called Pete in and sacked him at the request of the other three members. I asked Pete what exactly was said that day in 1962.
Wasn't a lot, actually. I'd walked in and...
Brian Epstein was a good man, wasn't he?
Epstein was sound, as far as I was concerned. Yeah. Okay. He, afterwards, he tried to, you know, he threw a lifeline to me, which I'll talk about afterwards. But basically, at that time, I don't know what had gone on. When I walked into the office, I'd been into the office before with Brian Epstein because I'd handled the business side of things as regards bookings.
Yeah, you really were the manager before him, if you think about it. In terms of things getting done for the Beatles.
Yeah, promoters, fixing prices, bookings, taking bookings, So when Brian signed us, it was very much a case of we had meetings, but it was very much picking my brains. You know, what's this promoter? What's the price?
Well, he had no kind of... any.
Well,
kind
he
of,
had no background.
No, he was a record shop seller of music, you know.
So I went in there thinking it was going to be okay, another brain-picking session. Walked in about 11 o'clock in the morning, and as soon as I walked into the office, I could tell it wasn't Brian's normal, cool, calm, placid self. Very edgy, very agitated. And he talked around the subject for a while, and then he basically turned around and said, Pete, he said, I don't know how to turn around and tell you this, but he said, the boys want you out. And I suppose the key word was, it's already been arranged that Ringo will join the band on Saturday, which meant that something had been going on behind closed doors. That was the bombshell as far as I was concerned. I was scrabbling, sort of turning around saying, why? So the only thing I could think of was, what's the reason? And the reason that they gave was they feel Ringo's a better drummer. That to me...
Yeah, well, everybody knows that's not the truth.
Didn't hold up.
Okay, but like, where were you thinking, oh, wait a minute now, this was like, could you see that this band was going to do what exactly? At least become pretty famous in the UK, or at least last a year?
We could see it happening in the UK.
Yeah.
All of us could, because we just wanted that opportunity.
Yeah.
And Parlophone gave us that opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay, which you love me do when it's at the, you know, bottom end of the charts, but after that it opened the door.
Yeah.
What we'd realised was the fact, give us that opportunity, we're good enough, we're strong enough, we're bold enough to do it. Once we've got that opportunity, we're going to be number one dogs in England. You know, no Cliff Richards, no, you know, other people.
And Liverpool was behind you, the town of Liverpool, like in terms of the Mersey Beat, all the magazines, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because all of a sudden, you know, the onus had moved from London to Liverpool.
Yeah.
You know, where before it had been a case of like nothing exists outside of London, all of a sudden, because of the Beatles' breakthrough, you know, London was cascading down into Liverpool. They were looking at the bands. But apart from that, going back to your original question, it was very much a case of, yes, we did get to number one, which they eventually did. But I don't think in the right mind, no one envisaged them going on to become the icons of the music industry.
No, obviously not, you know? Yeah.
That was just like, wow.
I mean, they didn't change music. They changed the culture. They changed, like, whatever.
They changed everything.
Yeah, they changed
style, everything.
Yeah. And, like, you know, it wasn't necessarily a mean thing. These things happen. Just go find another band. Would you have said, okay, this is bad. I really wanted to stay with this crowd, the Beatles. I was getting on great for 2 years, but I'll go find another band. No?
Basically, what I... When it happened, I had, you know, it was like I needed time to basically get my head together again, which I did. I stayed away from the public for about a couple of weeks, just stayed in the confines of my own house. I had offers pouring in from everywhere, Dave, from London, big bands, the other people joined me. I didn't, and I finally decided to join a band called Lee Curtis and the All-Stars, which I'd heard good reports about. I sent spies out to watch them. And they came back and turned around and said, no, it's a band with a lot of potential. So when Joe Flannery came and approached me, I'd already made my mind up. Yeah, I'm going with them.
Okay, but like, you know, when you were told in the office that that's it, you're dismissed, and like the guys want you out, which is Brian saying the other three did, and yet the other three never got in touch with you to say you're out, which is really like not very cool. I remember the last time you were here, on this very programme 35 years ago.
My goodness,
yeah, just the studio next door. You did say you never saw them really again. And you, like, you, I think you were standing somewhere once when they came off a stage somewhere. I don't know where it was exactly. You said you saw them. I can't remember exactly. But like Neil Aspinall, who was the road manager of the Beatles and that, and who was also was involved with your, was married to your mother?
No, he had an affair with her.
And he said, this is disgraceful. I mean, you go down to the Grapes pub on the same street as Matthew Street as the cavern, and you go in for a pint in there, and he says he's going to resign. Now, what did you know about the Beatles then? Like, are you mad just because I've been sacked? Because you told him, don't even think of resigning. Don't even think of resigning from what? A band that's going to conquer the world? No,
not at that stage. But I mean, what they were doing, I mean, with the recording contract and the inner belief that they were going to do something big in Liverpool. Okay, he wasn't just going to be a normal road manager, which is ferrying bands around to local gigs.
Yeah.
You know, he was going to be, you know, with a number one band, playing tours, whatever else got involved, you know, I mean, from that particular stage. And that was the reason why I basically turned around to him and said, stay with it. You know,
right.
It's like, go with them, develop with them. As the world knows now, you know, it went far beyond that because Neil loved the bones of him, and I'm glad it happened. He became MD of Apple.
Yeah.
Right? And it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy.
I mean, like, you'd done the hard slog with all those gigs, you'd contract secured, you'd done your kind of Brian Epstein in terms of, like, you were the manager in some ways, and then you get the sack and the guys hadn't got the whatever to look you in the face and say you're gone. In subsequent years, the one person you'd probably want to talk to, and he's still there, is Paul. Sit down, pint, nobody around. Now, Paul has to, like, did Paul get in touch with you when Anthology came out in 95?
No, I don't know where this came from.
So he didn't?
No, the approach was made by Neil initially, and he turned around and said, Pete, Apple are interested. I'm the spokesman for Apple, right, because he was MD of Apple. He said, Apple are interested in doing the Anthology. They're interested in using some of the material which you're on, you know, some of your likenesses. How do you feel about it? I said, well, yeah, it sounds good. And he said, they're going to pay you for it. So I said, well, that sounds even better.
Mm.
But once it got to that stage, it went to legals. My solicitors sorted out with Apple's solicitors, and I ended up being on 7 tracks on Anthology 1.
Yeah, Anthology being like looking back on the Beatles, the big collections of songs in the mid-90s.
Well,
yeah.
This story, which is emanated from Paul phone and me to turn around and say,
not true,
Anthology.
No. Hold on a second. What are you telling me here? Have you not talked to Paul at all?
I haven't talked to Paul.
Ever once? Never in touch. Anthology's coming out, and I'm delighted to say you're going to get a few million out of this.
No, since the dismissal in 62, there's been no verbal contact with Paul whatsoever. Played the same 3 gigs as him, you know, because we support Bill Leakes and the All-Stars. I came off stage, they were going on stage. Nothing was said.
Oh, that's the
and
situation.
There's never been any verbal dialogue between me and Paul since then. So where that's come from? Ask Paul.
So, if he rang, pint, yeah?
Would you problems.
Yeah,
I've always said that. I've got nothing to fear. As long as it's not going to be a case of we sit down, and I think that's what the media expects.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn around to Paul and go, okay, after 60-odd years, why the hell did you kick me out? Right? I'm far beyond that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd be sitting down to talk with him about, you're a granddad, I'm a granddad. You've had 60 years in show business, I've had 60 years in show business. Let's swap stories.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice. Because, like, when they went on to be what they became to be, and you would not have been a spare cog in the whatever, you know, it would have been fine. It would have happened with you as well. Or would it? I mean, like, the whole Ringo thing, like, you know, they wanted Ringo, didn't they?
It was their choice.
But at the same time, you know, they got Ringo in, and there were still more Beatles gigs to be done, and Ringo couldn't leave the band he was already with, and so you did 3 gigs with the Beatles knowing that you were sacked.
No, I didn't.
Ah, you see, that's not true either, because I was just going to say, wait a minute, the 4 you went up on stage, they still said nothing. So
no,
tell me,
where
am I? Is that another myth?
No, oh my God, Dave.
I know.
Sit here and
let's
spell myths.
Let's write the book of Beatle myths and Pete Best.
Pete and Dave write the myths. No, what happened was I was kicked out on a Wednesday. Ringo was joining the band on a Saturday. Okay, we had 2 gigs in between. Epstein turned around and said, will you cover them, Pete? I turned around and said, yeah. When I got back home in the solitude of my own house, I turned around and thought to myself, I can't face those guys again.
Yeah.
Right? But Epstein had already forewarned her. He'd seen about it, and he had Johnny Hutch from the Big Three on the same bill, standing by to replace me in case I didn't turn up. But the three gigs which I appeared with the Beatles were with Lee Curtis and the All Stars. They were the ones where we passed like ships in the night.
Ah, now I get it. Okay, right, okay. Because the whole thing being handled so very badly. I mean, with some of the crowd starting off saying, Pete forever, Ringo never. I mean, like that kind of thing. Like, how dare they get rid of Pete Best kind of thing. You know, Ringo can do fine and Rory Storm or whoever he's with right now. He doesn't need to be brought into the Beatles.
It was wonderful. It was very enlightening. It was very heartwarming that I had such, you know, fantastic support from the kids in Liverpool. But deep down inside, I knew that it wasn't going to change things. But it was wonderful to see the reaction from it.
OK, let's go to about 5 or 6 years later, very quickly. But the Beatles' career, just in terms of albums, so short. Like, you know, from about 62 to about 69, it's really only about 6 or 7 years. Mm. And the White Album, which you said before, is probably your favourite album.
One of them, yeah.
Right, OK.
So diverse. So
yeah,
diverse.
I know. Around that time, the White Album came out, were you packing loaves of bread in a factory?
Yeah, would have been, yeah.
That was your job then?
That was it.
Like, you know, you're married to Kathy, who was somebody you had met in Beatle times, right?
Yeah.
And still, that went right through, etc. You went and worked for the civil service for about 20 years as well. But is that what you were doing, working stacking bread?
Yeah, yeah. When I quit show business, which was around about 67, 68, I went into, thought it'd be dead easy, I had the educational qualifications. Filled the application forms in, went after the jobs, got to the jobs. Fine, Mr. Best, you're wonderful, love your qualifications. What have you been doing for the last 8 years? I've been a rock drummer.
Yeah, right.
Oh, well, yes, thank you. We'll be in touch with you. Yeah. Right. So it was like that. And it went on and on and on. And in the end, I went to a bakery where they was doing manual work, and I turned around and said, have you got a job? Let me just get a job and I'll prove myself for 12 months that I have turned over a new leaf. I want to look after my family.
Yeah.
And they did. And I stacked bread and sliced bread, you know, for about 12 months. And then I went to the civil service, went to the employment office, and they turned around and gave me an offer of a job in the civil service. I said, fine. So it was promotion. There was promotional channels available.
Yeah.
And I worked my way through from being a, you know, lowly clerical officer to managerial level.
And you've had a very happy life.
Very much so.
Yeah.
You're listening to the best of Dave Fanning on 2FM.